Okay. So this is a data centric podcast with Steve McDowell and Matt Kimball. I'm Steve.
I'm Matt.
And we're technology analysts, as you know, at More Insights and Strategy, where we cover all things data center. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Hey, so I'm just back from IBM Think in San Francisco.
Took you a while to get back, huh?
You have no idea, man. Flight delays, no. But I thought today we could, you know, talk a little bit about IBM and what they're doing and what they talked about and interestingly, what they maybe didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, is there anything that's happening lately you want to talk about that might be in the news?
Yeah. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Arm formally launched their what they were codenamed Ares and Helios, their N1 and E1 platforms for data center and edge compute. Quite interesting. If you look at the performance numbers that they're touting and the features that they've built in, this is legit server class, enterprise server class IP.
What is ARM delivering? Are they delivering IP blocks to their silicon partners, are they?
IP blocks and reference designs to their silicon partners to go develop platforms based on, like they typically do. But when you look at it's incredible. When you look at the per core performance and the power dissipation associated with that, you know, you think about these large data centers, cloud enterprise, hyperscale enterprise kind of customers that can save millions of dollars based on, a few percentage points of power savings. ARM is going to look very, very attractive if they can kind of push past that misperception around ecosystem adoption, software ecosystem adoption. Because they have a 64 part that they are showcasing with a spec int score, which is integer performance that is, off the charts, rated at 105 watts TDP. That's about half of what you see from some of the top line competitors on the x86.
So answer me this, because I'm not real smart. How does ARM know what that's going to be? Is this all from simulation? Because they haven't built any prototype parts, right?
That's correct. Right. Yep. Okay.
And do you have a sense for how this is different from what Amazon is doing with their ARM server parts? And then remind me, who else is making ARM server parts?
Huawei.
Qualcomm is not.
I'm sorry?
I said Qualcomm is not playing in that space right now, right?
Qualcomm is not. So this is a new microarchitecture. This, they launched this Neoverse brand. And I hate to call it a brand because it cheapens it a little bit. You know, a family of products that they will be producing over the next few years, or IP they'll be producing over the next few years. And this N1 platform and E1 platform that they launched are the first designs under this new microarchitecture. So if you look at it, and you look at the architecture itself, it's different from what ARM or from what Amazon was developing a couple of years back, right? It's Amazon took one of the older IP blocks and built a part based on that, and it's a good, highly performant part. Power efficient. But when you look at this microarchitecture, there are some key differences in a lot of different ways, from prefetch to cache architecture to the mesh they use to connect all the cores together. There are quite a few differences between this and that. I would call this, kind of server ready from the ground up, instead of, a partner taking it and making it server ready.
Okay, so I know we've talked about this a few times, but from your perspective, right, I guess two things, right? Is ARM going to become, and ARM the architecture, whoever's manufacturing the parts, right? Yeah. Is ARM going to become significant in the data center and hyperscale space, or is this another, kind of power PC MIPS thing that's an alternative? And if so, kind of what are the workloads you think are going to be good for those?
Yeah, it's a good question. I believe, that you can look at this as a fad or a trend or the beginning of a trend. And I see this as kind of an inflection point. You and I have talked about this, you're right, in the past, and that, this isn't the data center of old where you had an architecture lock-in at the lowest levels that, you know, the entire ecosystem had to adhere to. You know, in the land of cloud native and interpretive languages, architecture is not as important. I do believe that ARM is going to, especially for cloud native, the hyperscalers are going to embrace ARM. You know, you could argue that as AWS goes, everybody else goes, right? It's kind of like, you know, they found something that works, and all of these other cloud, you have to think all of these other cloud players are going to be fast followers. In fact, Huawei, when they developed their platform, you know, they were sure to mention that this didn't just have HPC applicability, but this was going to be used in their cloud data centers as well. So,
I think they're incented, right, to move that direction, because it's not just about the architecture. And you talked about TDP and things like that. And, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at storage. And when you look at the high price of, you know, SSDs versus spinning hard drives, for the hyperscalers, man, that is massively offset by the amount of cooling reduction you get and rack density you can increase. Right? So,
well,
at some point, the economics are going to be pushed by these guys.
Well, that's right. I mean, cloud providers live and die by operational expenses, right? And if I can cut my power and cooling costs significantly, that all goes directly to my bottom line. So,
for a lot of these workloads, good enough is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I sent you a link, right? You saw that Linus of Linux fame, right? Said no way.
Yeah.
No way ARM is.
Yeah.
Of course, his argument came down to, and he's, you know, famously opinionated, but it largely came down to people want to deploy what they can run on their desktop. And it's kind of an empty argument, because you can get ARM, maybe not in a Windows. Well, you can in a Windows machine today.
Sure,
right?
You can.
Yeah. It's not the same thing as developing on x86 and trying to deploy on Power AIX.
No, I felt like his argument had some weight about 10 or 15 years ago. It's a different world we live in, and he's a lot smarter than I am. I'm sure he's probably a little bit smarter than you too. But I think his opinion is a little bit outdated.
He's not smarter. He just knows different things. And one of the things I've learned in my long and distinguished career is you don't ask the engineers for business advice. Not to be insulting to anybody, but
amen.
Everybody has, you know, their areas of specialty, and you know, technologies very often win not because they're the best or even that the, you know, developers are friendly to it.
I someone told me, a mentor told me a long time ago, and I still hold on to it, that, you know, the road to bankruptcy court is littered with fantastic technology, right? Good ideas or great ideas or best technology doesn't always win. I wouldn't say very rarely does it win, but, you know, we put too much of a premium on, you know, as technical folks, as putting a premium on the technical specifications or features of a product or even a trend, right? And we forget less about the business implications. And that's why I think ARM is going to be really interesting. But, you know, tying this over to what you started with, you know, ARM does face a perception issue, just like, you know, the folks at IBM. They have a great part in power, right? Silicon is highly performant. You can do so much with it, but, you know, it hasn't really hit the velocity in the market, I think, that certainly that IBM was hoping for, but I think that others maybe anticipated as well. And is it just a perception issue, or is it something else?
I don't know, but I'm going to ding the bell, because we spent now 8 minutes on what should have been a 45-second news item. as we often do, right? Industry analysts, we like to talk.
Yes, we
do. Earnings season, this one caught my eye, and I know this one's near to dear to you, right? Lenovo Data Center said they grew their business, and this is, let me back up, right? So we're starting to see earnings from all kind of the tier one OEMs,
mm-hmm.
right, and the data center providers.
Yep.
And the growth in server, so we haven't seen Dell's earnings yet. By the time this podcast comes out, it will have been released, but as we record this, it's coming out in 2 days.
Yep.
So, you know, they're really kind of the bellwether in my mind as to where the market's going because they have such a big chunk of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at HPE, looking at Lenovo, looking at some of the storage guys that have announced, right, it doesn't seem like fourth quarter was kind to the server business, at least. Very kind, it seems, to composable and hyper-converged infrastructure.
Yeah.
But Lenovo seems to be an outlier. These guys say they grew 30% worldwide, and they didn't give a number, but they said triple-digit percentage growth in America, in North America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they on fire? Are we seeing big numbers because they're starting from such a small market position, or do these guys have some fire behind them?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, certainly they're starting from a lower position in the market, right? So you're gonna the growth is gonna look a little bit more astronomical. But the other thing they've done, they have a model called ODM Plus, whereby it's their approach for selling into cloud providers. And I can say I've heard more and more from cloud providers of all sizes that Lenovo has been aggressively chasing that space. So I think you can attribute some of that to the footprint that they've started to establish in the cloud centers, data centers, for sure. And yeah, I think part of it is also that, you know, they're getting wins in the enterprise, and that's driving some, but they've done a much better job of implementing their SMB model through the channel. And that is, both direct to SMB customers and through the channel. So I think that's probably you're seeing the fruits of their efforts there as well.
Yeah, and I'll say I've been impressed with Lenovo. They're not the same company. And I think the last 5 years, all of the technology companies have evolved to some degree, right? But Lenovo is not the same company they were when they took over X Series from IBM, right? At the time, they were, you know, they were selling technology, and now they seem to have a product strategy, right? Yeah. And the analyst events we've gone to, they're telling a cohesive story. And I know we're not talking about Mobile World Congress because it's still ongoing, but some of the stuff they're showing off around Edge,
yeah,
really, really cool, right? So they have people there thinking about products, it seems like, for the first time since I've been aware of Lenovo, over the past, you know, 3 years.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things there. You know, a couple of people I think that really have impacted change. The first is Kirk Skaugen, you know, he's the new, I guess it's president of data center, Lenovo data center. He came from Intel. He gets data center, and he's done a fabulous job of kind of righting the ship. And there's another gentleman I want to mention, and it's kind of there's a sad aspect to this, but his name's Rod Lappin, Roderick Lappin. He was the chief sales guy for Lenovo for worldwide. He has had a huge impact on their selling motions and the effectiveness of those selling motions. He tragically passed away last week. Just a sudden thing, and it's so sad because he was such a great guy, so full of energy, and he was so impactful on that organization. And while it's terrible for his family, and I hope they can find some strength to get through it, I also hope that the Lenovo organization doesn't let this impact them, because, you know, the things he put in motion were the right, you know, the programs and the strategy, they were the right program or strategy and right programs. I hope those continue and that they kind of push through, because it was certainly the right path to take.
Yeah, and I think Lenovo gets that, right? Their executives have all adopted kind of the from my perspective, right, the right narrative, the one I agree with. but one that the market's responding to clearly, right? And you know, there always is a danger when a leader like that leaves from whatever reason, and this one, he sadly passed away.
Yeah.
But I'm optimistic, and they're moving, they have good momentum, good inertia, and that takes a while to fade. So I guess, you know, we won't know this for a long time, but mm-hmm. they're doing the right things now. And I'm impressed. HPE also announced earnings.
Yep.
Their CPU business was down a little bit. They said in the earnings call, I'm going to ask you this kind of live here, right? They said their tier one business was down. So when I read that from HPE, what does that mean? They said if you extract that, they were actually up.
Yeah.
Is this their brand? What is their tier one business?
Yeah. So as I was pulling through or pushing pushing through the numbers, pulling through the numbers, sifting through the numbers. You know, they break things into value workloads and or value systems and volume systems. Volume systems, I think, are kind of where they were taking their hit and what they align to their tier one platforms. And those are, you know, your traditional HP DL380, 385, ProLiant DL380, 385, 325, et cetera, which are very heavily channel focused and have appeal in the enterprise and in the SMB space. I believe that's what they're referencing when they talk to the tier one platforms. You know, now, because conversely, they talked about their value platforms actually increasing considerably from a sales out perspective. So, and those are your high value. Think about like SAP platforms, the higher end analytics platforms. Those they saw an uptick in the quite a significant uptick in the sell through. So, you know, tier one equate to the volume kind of channel plays, and then the value is where they saw significant gains.
Yeah. So I read this. I read their earnings and I listened to their. Well, I'm going to lie. I didn't listen to their earnings call, but I read the transcript.
I'm going to lie.
which is how I often do these earning things. I tune in when I can, but the guys over at SeekingAlpha.com, they're pretty good about turning the transcript around in a few hours, right? Mm-hmm. And it's posted there, and it's easier for me to search through for things I care about and get the facts right and not rely on my notes. But one of the things I said, and I was coming out, so this is going to be kind of our bridge into talking about IBM, mm-hmm. right? So I was at IBM Think, and I was very kind of mixed on their messaging, right? IBM is a company that makes a lot of money on hardware, right? On mm-hmm. technology.
Yes.
But if you listen to their executive speeches at Think, I don't think I heard anyone mention any platform. And I was in the, you know, 10-hour analyst program where they're talking about their vision. Mm-hmm. And I don't think once the power branding came up, but not talking about in the context of power systems, right?
Yeah.
And then as I'm reading the HPE earnings, the transcript of the announcement, or the call rather, you know, it seems like the momentum at HPE, and you and I get into the weeds of, you know, 3% processor sales if you subtract this out or whatever.
Yeah.
They talked about the growth numbers more of software-defined infrastructure, whether that's composable, HCI, whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't write the numbers down, but they said something like HCI grew for them 70%.
Correct, yeah.
Right? Whereas CPU sales grew -3 to 3, depending on how they count them.
Yeah.
To me, right, the conversation is starting to shift. It's less about you know, the server, which we're delivering a lot of capacity, and more about these workloads. And much as we saw with virtualization, you know, 12 years ago, you know, the continued existence of virtualization coupled with objects, not objects, but coupled with containers and HCI frameworks. You're putting a lot more workloads and a lot more fungible workloads on kind of the same hardware, right? And does that stall hardware sales? Is the story now more about, as a tier one OEM, is it more about the software I'm selling and less about the platforms that just need to be capable enough? And let's not think about their numbers. Let's think about the total.
Well, you know, you raised something interesting because, I agree with you 100% that the focus is, and you see this with everybody, not just those two companies, the focus is heavily on the software, the workload, the application versus the underlying technology. But if you married market share numbers, or not married, but tracked market share numbers over time, you would see, like if you look at the ID forecasts over the last few years, you'll see that you know, they have the major OEMs, the, you know, Dell EMCs, the HPEs, the Lenovos, the Ciscos, and then the Chinese players, you know, the Inspurs, the Huaweis, et cetera, et cetera. But then you have two other categories, and this is where it's interesting. ODMs and other, right? And those are essentially white box players. If you track those over time, the market share for those two groups or categories continues to grow and grow and grow. And I think part of it is because there is less of an emphasis on infrastructure. There is good enough. There is, I hope it doesn't break, right? Or it shouldn't break. But by the way, even if it does break, I have redundancy, DR, and all this other stuff built in through the software deployments, right? Through
And I can run some of this virtually in the cloud.
And I can run some virtually in the cloud. So I think there's certainly less of an emphasis on the hardware platforms, without a doubt. And that's something, you know, that I think you're probably seeing play out. I don't buy that virtualization is causing people or causing organizations to utilize hardware more and therefore declining the sales of servers. I don't buy that notion at all. I think actually it's causing organizations to think less critically about the hardware infrastructure that they're putting in their data centers.
Okay. And causing OEMs
to change,
be creative, maybe in the way they count it as well, because what I didn't write down here is I don't know what the HP's GreenLake numbers were, right? And GreenLake is their consumption-based services. Mm-hmm. And that by design is going to offset sales of some of their core technology businesses. And I have to believe that within HPE and Dell's doing similar things, as is Lenovo and all these guys, there has to be some internal tension around, where does the sales motion really go? Is it on consumption-based? And then if we start thinking about cloud, and I think we talk about this every podcast, and I definitely want to talk about it in the context of IBM. It's how much do I embrace cloud at the expense of my on-prem hardware?
Well, so here's the thing, Steve. We talk about, people think of IBM as being kind of a legacy kind of company, and they're outdated, and, it's still the blue suits, white shirt, and red tie crowd, right? But if you think about how IBM has shifted its business over the years, you could argue they've been in front of the market quite a bit, right? Because how long ago was it that they sold their volume hardware business, which was, the X systems, and they put a bigger emphasis on global services and the software that they're delivering to enable businesses. And for some time, you don't hear them really talk about the AS400 or mainframes, or even the Z systems. You don't hear them talk about that much, as much anymore. Everything they talk about is business focused and helping the businesses do better through software, right? And it's been that way for some time.
And I don't think I realized how much that was true until just before Think, you and I worked on a project together where we focused in pretty heavily on IBM and how they talk about everything, mm-hmm. right? And you're exactly right. I mean, for them, it's about, I don't want this to be a commercial for IBM, but you're exactly right. And they started this, I think, in the mid-90s during their turnaround where they said, it's really more about the software and the problems I'm trying to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And to solve a problem, I'm going to sell you some really expensive software. It's going to run naturally on the systems that I'm manufacturing and that aren't going to be commodity like power. And I'm going to implement it with a huge services organization, right? So they're making money from one end to the other. And they were first in cloud, right? We talk about AWS, but in 2006, 2007, IBM was there with the IBM cloud, selling to enterprises who wanted to lift some data out of their data center. Where was I going with this? So they have some stellar hardware and they're not sitting on their laurels. The Power 9 stuff is truly awesome.
Yes, it is. And this goes back to something we're, talking about earlier with ARM too. It is truly awesome. I wonder if IBM has the appetite or the desire to see, kind of broad market adoption of Power, not that it would ever take the place of x86, but the Power platform has been out for some time and it hasn't really lived up to its
I don't think it's their goal.
Yeah,
honestly, Matt, I don't think I think if you look from Jenny on down, at least for her to her staff, right? Mm-hmm. It's about top line revenue selling solutions.
Yeah.
And Power is an enabler. Right. And Power is very much a lock in. If I'm selling a solution that's running on AIX or whatever's running on Z series.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
I don't see any. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't see anybody adopting Power outside of kind of embedded spaces. You know, in commercial commodity servers that we track, I don't think that's their goal.
No, I haven't seen it either. But, you know, I find some interesting, you know, if the market pays a little bit closer attention to IBM, you know, they might find this interesting as well. But like they have a solution called Linux One, which is essentially taking a mainframe and making it available for a cloud development platform.
So this runs on their Z series, is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Where you can do thousands of Linux VMs on
exactly. Yeah. So, geez, doesn't that sound interesting? I mean, it sounds interesting from a cloud perspective. Sounds interesting from a large enterprise perspective. You know, it's technologies like this that I just think, you know, I'd be curious to see if you know IBM put a full throttled effort into driving awareness and adoption, what they could achieve, because there's a lot of promise there. And when you take that and you combine it with some of the things that IBM is really well known for, right? Performance, security, reliability, in their services organization, it sounds like it could be pretty good.
It could. And I know firsthand, I have to be careful what I say here to our wide audience of three. I know there's frustration in the product groups, even at the VP level of the product groups, that they don't have the latitude to make the kind of moves you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I can't go sell power or storage or you know certain software pieces outside of IBM solutions. We treat that, they'll tell me, that we treat that as opportunistic, not as strategic,
yeah.
Right? Our strategic thrust is all around IBM solutions. And at IBM Think, those solutions, all they talked about, they talked about a couple of things, but all they talked about was Watson.
Yeah.
You know, AI. I'm gonna leave ML out for a minute, but artificial intelligence in the enterprise, hot topic. Mm-hmm. The tier one OEMs in NVIDIA for sure are focusing very heavily on the learning side, right? How can I go exploit my data? IBM is really, or how can I train, right, based on my data? IBM is really, what are the practical applications of this? And they showed off extremely impressive demonstrations of Watson. A couple of things, right? Watson running in the public cloud was a big announcement. Mm-hmm. And then Watson on-prem on Z-Series, and then Watson on the IBM private cloud with applications like, you know, with cameras and stores in Watson-driven AI, I can now do inventory tracking without humans,
yeah.
Right? It's not just about facial recognition for advertising.
Right.
It's about how many cars are in the parking lot. Do I need to get somebody to the register?
Yeah.
You know, they're putting all of these decisions in the hands of the computers. So for them, heavy thrusted think around AI and Watson and embracing the public cloud with those technologies.
But you know what's funny about that, Steve, is talking about a lot of back office kind of, well, some of that's, you know, real-time decision making, but IBM is so well known for its back office, its presence in the back office, right? And if you look at Fortune 500, you look at the top banks in the world, you know, IBM dominates. Now, they went out and purchased a small software company called Red Hat, right? I mean, you think about the footprint that they have in the global 500, global 100, and now they have this asset in Red Hat. Think about, you know, if they were less constrained, what they could potentially do.
So Red Hat, right, to my mind, was all about, yes, there's their enterprise footprint, but it's about their container and cloud technology. Yeah. And one of the things we're seeing IBM doing now, I think for the first time, is embracing public cloud. So they've always had a strong private cloud footprint that they'll sell to, you know, the Fortune 500 is their target, the Fortune 100 are their adopters, right, of IBM private cloud, is my perception. But they're, I think, being forced by the realities of the market to open all of this up to AWS. They're not talking about Google Cloud at all and a little bit about Azure. And Red Hat gets them there, right? Red Hat gives them, you know, the workforce that knows how to work with the open source tools that are doing the containers, that are doing these hybrid cloud deployments. And you're right, it opens the doors, I think, in a big way to enterprise. is it worth what they paid for them? I don't know. But having them on board as an asset, I think, is smart and strategic.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know what some of the kind of the thinking in the boardroom was around that acquisition, because I think you and I see a value in that acquisition that is almost, there's certainly a technology element to it, but there's also a kind of customer acquisition, customer retention aspect to it as well, if you will.
So there's a customer retention. There's also, IBM and Red Hat are very different cultures, and they say they're going to leave them separately. But there's a couple of things, right? They have the credibility in the open source world. Mm-hmm. Open source now runs the data center.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Microsoft. Microsoft recognizes this. Microsoft themselves are starting to do more point-oriented solutions that will run anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know where I'm going with this, but, I think long-term is where we're going to see the value of Red Hat at IBM. Short-term, they're going to have some nice IP integrations.
Yeah.
I know their storage team, right, is probably looking at Ceph stuff for object storage, and the container guys are looking at what Red Hat's doing around that.
But there's certainly a long-term play here that is yet to be realized, which I think might be the big, big win for IBM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say about IBM Think? So, I mean, the big things I wrote down were Watson was everywhere. There was a lot of stuff on the floor, not in the sessions, around Power 9.
Mm-hmm.
What
was the most interesting Power 9 demo, if you will, that you saw on the floor?
It was, honestly, I'm a density freak. So they had Power 9 up with one of IBM's storage arrays. And I texted you the number. I forget what it was, but it was like 45,000 VMs in 4U.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy density. Right? So if I'm HP selling 45,000 VMs in 4U, I'm saying my processor sales are down, right? But the productivity of my customer is out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
If I had a need for 45,000 VMs, 4U of X series might be interesting to me.
Or
not X series, Z series. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. There was Watson everywhere. There was a lot of, I think the most newsworthy thing is they're opening everything up now from not just Watson, but Storage Group and some of their applications to embrace public cloud, right? So now if I want a data target that's not IBM cloud, I can go to AWS.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes.
Well, don't you feel, they kind of have to though, don't they? I mean.
They have to if cloud is their business model.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think the OEM struggle, and I've written this a few times, most recently in my coverage of some of Pure Storage's cloud moves, which is, the traditional OEMs, and this word's overused, but I think are suffering a little bit of innovator's dilemma when it comes to on-prem versus cloud, right? As a workload moves to a cloud, that's lost hardware revenue to the OEMs. And hardware revenue, maybe not high margin, but high top line.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of retrain people to look at the numbers differently when instead of a $300,000 server, I'm selling a $30,000 software package at, 80% margin versus 20.
Yeah. Or less.
Or less, right?
Yeah.
I think there's some very real struggles that the Dells and the HPEs and so forth of the world are going through as they figure out how to embrace cloud. It seems to me like IBM is over that hump. IBM is saying cloud is the business, and this, marches toward, as we said a while ago, right? If their strategy is all about solutions to IT, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that their competitors are saying the right answer is solutions to IT. It's more our branded solutions to IT. And when you start moving to cloud and hybrid cloud, we get nervous.
Yeah.
And that's borne out, I think, when you look at the capabilities that, I don't want to name names right now, right? But if you look at some of the capabilities of these cloud-ready solutions, I'm doing my air quotes, they're very often backup targets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Very, very little. How do I orchestrate a workload up to cloud and keep it there for a long period of time, bring it back? that's not what you're getting from the tier one hardware OEMs.
Right. But I do think though that, you know, when you, especially with the emergence of HCI, CI, and even some of these like appliances that the OEMs deliver that are, I don't want to use the word appliance, but let's say pre-configured CI or HCI solutions for workloads like a HANA kind of deployment from, say, Lenovo, right? I think you start to see the shift in messaging from speeds and feeds to solving business needs. And so I think it's a slow turning ship, but I think it's a turning ship nonetheless. It's just going to take
time. So, yeah, and I'm going to watch it closely, as I know you are, right? And how much of this is saying what IT wants to hear versus how much of it is strategic, right? And the strategic part is going to shake out, I think, more less in the messaging and more in what are they actually delivering, mm-hmm. and what are they focusing on when they talk about it to Wall Street analysts, which is sometimes a different message than we see from the marketing teams.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, Lenovo launched their TruScale consumption-based computing model. Or I should say offering a couple weeks back. And to what you're saying, you know, I thought it was interesting. Number one, it's great to see them get in the space, you know, and join HPE and Dell and Cisco and others. But as I looked at their messaging and I looked at the way they positioned this, they were definitely looking at this. This was more... In fact, I'm kind of going through my head trying to remember what platforms. I think it's every single platform that is in their portfolio you can use a service with. But they definitely are going down the treat compute as a utility approach, much like cloud, versus, you know, there is something, you know, truly differentiated and distinguished on platform A versus platform B. And, you know, you literally write a check to them every month for, you know, consumption of resources based on the kilowatt hours that you are consuming. So, you know, I think they're definitely you're starting to see some of this move. But you're right. It all will really be told. Their seriousness will really be told in the products that they end up offering and the way they're counting their revenue now, right? Top line versus margin versus and kind of to what you said, training the market to understand the difference between the two, although they should.
Yeah. And it's going to be fascinating to me to see how this whole on-prem consumption-based thing actually shakes out, right? Yeah. Some part of me says, back way up, I think this is a great model and it's a great model for IT guys to look at, you know, in the 3 to 5 year horizon, right? And right now, right, if I were deploying and I needed fast access to my data and compute, on-prem consumption-based is great. Mm-hmm. It solves some of the problems of clouds being distant with everything that goes with that, mm-hmm. and kind of mitigates some of the boomerang we're seeing from cloud, or people say we're seeing from cloud, right? Mm-hmm. But... You know, long term, as we solve some of the issues that are intrinsic in public cloud computing, how do I get my data up there? How do I do it efficiently, inexpensively, quickly? I think consumption based on prem starts to lose some of its luster. And certainly, it's an extremely crowded market coming out of 2019, right? Yeah. You know, GreenLake and Lenovo are not alone. Dell is going to beef up their offerings. IBM's been there forever. Mm-hmm. Amazon's coming in with Outpost. Mm-hmm. Google announced something that looks a little bit like Outpost coming down. And Microsoft has been kind of quietly doing on-prem Azure stuff, you know, since the beginning of Azure. So I don't know how much that changes the conversation. I think it just brings confusion and choice. And the real winners then are going to become the people, and we've said this many times, right? The real winners then become, what is my management plan?
Yeah.
And then the hardware, you know, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. And it kind of hurts my ears to hear that, but it's true. I mean, at some point it is going to be the hardware, who cares. And it is about the control plane, right?
Although, you know, we've been saying this for 20 years, so who knows if it's ever really going to be true.
We have.
I mean, hard, hard, hardware's always going to matter to some segment of the population. But what we're seeing now, man, with the HP numbers and what IBM's doing right now, it's very much about workload management, mm-hmm. right? And more efficiently utilize my infrastructure wherever it is.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, which is why I'm really excited, because I think in about 6 weeks, you and I are going off to Nutanix next. And we did this a year ago in New Orleans. They're interesting to me. They look a lot like VMware, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, most certainly do.
And they want to be that control plane. And there's a very real danger, and I think we should do a show just on this. When you take a hardware vendor-specific solution for your management plane, that kind of locks you in mm-hmm. for a while, which is good for the hardware guys, but how good is it for IT?
Right. It's going to be fun to get back out to the Nutanix event for sure. And I know we talked about this as well, but there's an energy at that company and around that company that I haven't felt. You mentioned they're like VMware was a few years ago, without a doubt, or heavily reminiscent of the early days of VMware.
Yeah. All right. So we've been talking a long time, so we should shut this thing down before we bore everybody. Although my mom tells me, my only confirmed listener, that she likes to hear me talk. So where are we heading? I'm going off in 2 weeks to, I'm very excited about this. I've never been to one of these, the NVIDIA GPU technology conference, mm-hmm. Where it's interesting to me, the intersection of what NVIDIA is doing and what the data center is consuming.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of tracks. I was doing my schedule builder last night to see what I could, sneak out of analyst programs to go look at. They have a lot of tracks about the practical application of their technologies and IT.
There you go. Solving solutions or providing solutions, right?
Yeah, no, they're selling hardware. But what's interesting with, we were talking about ARM at the beginning of this whole thing. All of their AI stuff that they're doing turnkey, it's got big 8-core ARM chips in it and a bunch of GPUs. Mm-hmm. Their thinking is the processor is just an engine to get to get the training sets down to the GPU. And for those workloads, that may be true. Where are you going? What do you got on deck?
So I'm heading off to a couple of advisory councils, one up in New York for investors that are still curious about what 2019 brings for both AMD and Intel. So I'll be doing a roundtable up in New York City, and then I'm going over to Europe to get a security briefing from one of the it's under embargo, so I'll just say it's one of the big global OEMs. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what those bring out. And then you and I will both
we'll both be at Nutanix next, right? And then a few weeks after Nutanix next is the big Dell event, which I always love. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's it. Anything else you want to say?
No, it's great chatting. We can't wait to do this again next week.
Next week? Yeah. So I will say, half of More Insights right now is off in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. There's not a lot of intersection between MWC and what you and I cover. Yeah. But it will be interesting to read their reporting. A lot of the press right now is around Edge, which excites me and I think is an extension of the data centers. We'll be talking about that soon. But if you're listening to this, go look up the More Insights team's coverage, Patrick Moorhead of MWC. Anyway, I'm going to stop this recording now and we'll do it again sometime.
Thanks, Steve.
In the future. Thanks.